This is KMXT Public Radio, 100.1 FM. KMXT is also in HD, and we have HD2 and HD3 as well. We're also streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. Here in Kodiak, fair skies, 34 degrees, west winds, 14 miles per hour looking out the window. Couple of patches of blue, but it is getting to be mostly gray once again. 40% chances of snow showers this afternoon, mostly cloudy. High is expected for the rest of the day, and highs in the upper 30s, up to 37. Tonight, snow showers are likely mainly before 3 a.m. Northwest winds are going to go up to 25 miles per hour, gusts up to 30. And there could be some snow accumulation, but it'll probably be less than an inch. Tomorrow, Friday, looks like there's going to be a little bit more snow, but Saturday could be partly sunny going into the weekend. For the midday report, we're going to hear a little bit about the free application for federal student aid, or FAFSA, as well as the Kodiak Fish and Game Advisory Committee. We'll have that after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Biden is preparing to deliver his State of the Union address in the coming hours. Part of it's expected to highlight economic progress in this country. NPR Scott Horsley reports Biden's address comes 8 months before an election that may hinge, at least in part, on voters' confidence in the president's economic stewardship.
Polls show many voters are unhappy with Biden's handling of the economy, despite strong job gains, low unemployment, and faster growth than many forecasters had expected. Inflation has also cooled significantly, but the high cost of housing, college, and everyday expenses remains a source of frustration for many voters. The average worker's buying power is slightly lower now than it was when Biden took office, although real wages are higher than they were before the pandemic. The White House says lowering costs for working families is a top priority. Biden is expected to tout his efforts to fight what he calls junk fees. He'll also push for higher taxes on corporations, although that's unlikely in a divided Congress. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
During his State of the Union address, the president plans to formally announce that the U.S. military plans a new pier on the coast of Gaza. It will allow for emergency aid deliveries by sea in a matter of weeks. This comes from senior U.S. officials. We have more from NPR's Greg Myrie.
According to U.S. officials, the military will soon begin construction on a new pier along Gaza's Mediterranean coast so more food, medicine, and other aid can reach the territory that's desperately short of basic necessities. The officials say the plan does not call for U.S. troops to set foot in Gaza. They did not provide details on how this would work or precisely where the pier would be built. But they say this has been coordinated with Israel. The assistance will be shipped from the nearby island of Cyprus. The effort will take a number of weeks to get up and running and will initially be led by the U.S. military, with other countries and groups joining in eventually. Greg Myrie, NPR News.
Hamas negotiators left Cairo with no sign of progress in talks that would enable a temporary ceasefire between them and Israel. The prospects of achieving that before the start next week of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan are dim. An independent investigation of the Uvalde mass shooting concludes many failures in the local law enforcement's response to the 2022 attack. The probe focused on the law enforcement response specifically. It is among several. In January, the Justice Department concluded that responding officers from multiple agencies failed to follow standard training protocols for responding to an active shooter situation. The DOJ says some victims could have survived. 19 students and 2 teachers died. Before the close, the Dow was up 130 points. You're listening to NPR News. The Haitian government's extending its state of emergency, which includes a nighttime curfew to counter spiraling gang violence, especially in the capital, Port-au-Prince. Attacks on law enforcement have intensified since Prime Minister Ariel Henry recently agreed to hold general elections next year. He's been out of the country, unable to return home after armed groups laid siege to the international airport. Henry's currently in Puerto Rico. Between 2019 and 2022, emergency departments across the United States saw nearly 11,000 1,000 visits from young children who accidentally ingested melatonin. That is according to a new report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Here's NPR's Maria Godoy.
Melatonin is a hormone that helps regulate sleep-wake cycles. It's sold as a dietary supplement and is now commonly used as a sleep aid by both adults and children. Melatonin is often sold in gummy form, which can make it appealing to young children. The CDC says the number of ER visits by infants and young kids who ingested melatonin while unsupervised rose by 420% between 2009 and 2020. While most of these kids didn't need to be hospitalized, it is possible to take too much melatonin. Signs of an overdose in children include irritability, severe headaches, and extreme drowsiness. The CDC says caregivers should be careful not to leave melatonin within the reach of young kids. Maria Godoy, NPR News.
I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR be the model for high-quality journalism in the 21st century. This is NPR.
It's 12:06 in Kodiak. I'm Brian Benoit. It's time for the Midday Report. But before we get into news, we wanted to announce KMXT will be joining NPR's live coverage of the President Biden's State of the Union address at 5 p.m. tonight, Alaska time. We plan on staying with NPR and subsequent coverage as long as we can and still be able to bring you the start of the Kodiak Island Borough meeting at 6:30. There will be no local KMXT news or statewide news from APRN tonight. But now for the local news. Kodiak's Fish and Game Advisory Committee is making headway on its bylaws following a public fissure amongst committee members during a recent Board of Fish meeting. The committee advises the State Department of Fish and Game on local hunting and fishing during a committee meeting last Tuesday. One of the hot topics was the fallout from the winter's Board of Fish meeting that was held in Kodiak. Ron Kavanaugh was part of a group of six members who sent a letter to the Board of Fish in January going against the advisory committee's support of a specific set net proposal. It would have increased salmon fishing opportunities for the set gillnet fleet, but it was ultimately voted down by the board. During last week's advisory committee meeting, Kavanaugh acknowledged he should not have addressed the board in that manner.
That was a huge mistake, mentioning the AC anywhere in there, that I was not speaking for the AC. And that was a mistake that I did when I signed that, was not fully reading it, because I was approached by members of the Board of Fish about how my comments didn't match with what I voted.
In response, another AC member, Patty O'Donnell, wanted the committee to have a safeguard added to the bylaws to prevent members from speaking for the advisory committee instead of for themselves as individuals at a Board of Fish meeting.
I think it should be incorporated through the bylaws so that we're clear in the direction forward here, because I think what happened here in January undermined the credibility of the AC, and I feel I've spent 17 hours in here discussing all of that crap, and we got undermined, and it just doesn't sit well with me.
Currently, the Kodiak AC chair, Paul Shervanak, describes the group's bylaws as a work in progress. Shervanak also hopes to incorporate a clear guidance in the bylaws for AC members who hold designated seats to represent specific user groups, for example, a transporter holding a seat to represent sportfish charters and transporters. Alexis Kwachka offered to step down from his seat as the representative for processors. O'Donnell, who represents trawl setters, suggested that a person who is from the processing industry should sit in Kwachka's seat.
You don't have a designated processor seat, then I don't feel that any Joe should fill that seat. So if we don't have that designated seat filled by a processor, then I think maybe it should go to a concerned citizen.
Kwachka agreed with O'Donnell and said he didn't take it personally. Other members of the committee said they have reached out to individual processors and none of them have expressed interest in being on the Kodiak Advisory Committee. If a qualified candidate doesn't apply for the seat, then Board Chair Shervanak said the bylaws could allow for another willing candidate to represent the user group instead. For now, Kwachka will continue to hold the processor seat. And high school seniors are waiting longer than usual to get financial aid offers from colleges this year. That's after a bungled rollout of the new free application for federal student aid, or FAFSA. As KTOO's Katie Anastas reports, Alaska has the nation's lowest percentage of high school seniors who've submitted the FAFSA so far.
The FAFSA usually opens on October 1st. But this year, the new form didn't open until the end of December, and the launch was plagued with problems. Now, colleges are still waiting to get FAFSA data from the federal government, which means prospective students are waiting too.
Probably in April is when we'll be able to have all the information to give students a good idea of what they'll be eligible for.
That's Jennifer Schweitzer, the Associate Director of Financial Aid at the University of Alaska Southeast. She was at Juno Douglas High School Yada'at Kahle on a recent Saturday to talk to students and parents about the new FAFSA. Jessica Dean, a college advisor at the high school, helped organize the event.
Typically, everyone kind of knows where they're going by May 1st, but this year, we'll see.
Emily Herman was one of the parents who stopped by that afternoon. She says the FAFSA process is dragging out an already stressful time for her daughter.
It's a huge piece to the puzzle, and with it coming in last, it really is going to be, for our family, the determining factor of where she goes.
Herman and her daughter submitted the FAFSA weeks ago, but a lot of Alaska's high school seniors haven't. So far this year, less than 13% of them have submitted a FAFSA. That's the lowest of all 50 states. Alaska's submission rate tends to be one of the lowest in the country. Sana Eford, executive director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, wants to change that. She says the FAFSA might be a student's first step in realizing that college or other training after high school could be affordable after all.
The number one reason we hear for not pursuing a post-secondary program is the cost. And so that's why the FAFSA is so important.
More than $6 million in Pell Grant money went unclaimed by Alaska high school seniors in 2022. Eford says many students and families just don't fill the FAFSA out.
People perceive this, the FAFSA, as a very complicated, time-consuming form that they have to fill out.
Eford says there are also misconceptions about how much financial information you have to provide.
The federal government already has all the income and tax information, so it's not new information that you haven't provided to them.
High school seniors in Alaska might also see other jobs, like construction or commercial fishing, as more lucrative or accessible than college right after high school. Bill DeBond directs data and strategic initiatives at the National College Attainment Network.
Students with parents who went to college are themselves more likely to go to college, right? You have a lot of first-generation students in Alaska whose families either have not needed to attend college professionally or who have not had the opportunity to do so. Right? Or both, really.
Universities are doing what they can to help this year's seniors, including delaying their decision deadlines. That's been good news for Kira Wood, one of Dean's students.
Like, honestly, I've gotten an email from every college that I've applied to that they're pushing it back or they're accepting it for a longer day, which is good. I'm glad I wouldn't have to be at the mercy of a system that's going slow to try to get in and get financial aid.
In the meantime, he's applying to other scholarships that aren't tied to the FAFSA process. Students and families can find free online resources, including how-to videos for filling out the FAFSA, on the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education's website. There's also one-on-one support available for students and families by phone, email, or Zoom. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
The Alaska House passed a bill yesterday that would reduce the down payments necessary to qualify for state-backed mortgage loans. Current law prohibits the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation from making loans worth more than 95% of the value of a single-family home. The bill, proposed by Governor Mike Dunleavy, would remove that restriction. The corporation told lawmakers the change would allow its board to reduce the required down payment from 5% to 3%. Representative Dan Sadler from Eagle River and the House Majority Leader said the bill would help Alaskans struggling to afford a home.
Homeownership is the first big step towards financial security and long-term financial health for Americans and Alaskans. You know, inflation has made that first step a doozy.
The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers loans through partner banks across the state. Reducing the required down payment would allow the state-backed housing lender to better compete with federal mortgage giants Freddie Mac and Fannie Mac, which offer several 3% down payment options. Anchorage Democrat Representative Genevieve Mina said she hoped the bill would help make homeownership more realistic for younger Alaskans.
There are a lot of folks, especially in my generation, who don't think that they'll be able to buy a house because they can't afford the mortgage, because they can't afford the 20% down. That's not the only path to home ownership, and empowering AHFC to have more assistance for all folks will be really helpful in helping to promote home buying and also to invigorate our housing market.
The bill is one of a few efforts from Dunleavy this session aimed at lowering the cost of housing. Another included in the governor's capital budget would create a down payment assistance program aimed at recent college or technical school graduates. Homeowners wouldn't have to stay in their home for 5 years to receive the full $20,000 in assistance. The bill passed the House by a vote of 39-1, with only Wasilla Republican David Eastman voting no. It is now headed to the Senate. And leading Alaska legislators said on Tuesday that there's little appetite for spending from savings to pay a supersized permanent fund dividend this year, likely killing a proposal from Governor Mike Dunleavy. That's according to reporting from the Alaska Beacon. In December, the governor proposed spending almost $2.3 billion on a dividend of roughly $3,500 per resident under a formula in state law. That would result in a $1 billion deficit and require spending from the state's constitutional budget reserve. But as a draft budget takes shape in the House, top members of both the House and Senate say they're unlikely to spend from the reserve this year. When the budget leaves the House, Palmer Republican Delana Johnson said she expects the dividend to be whatever can be afforded under a balanced budget. Senator Bert Stedman, a Republican from Sitka and co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee, said a 25% dividend could fit within a balanced budget alongside the legislature's just-passed education funding increase, though there wouldn't be a lot of excess room, he said. The 25% dividend would be worth about $1,360 per resident. Per recipient, and cost about $914 million, according to estimates published by the Legislative Finance Division last week. Officials from the Alaska Department of Revenue are expected to present an updated state revenue forecast to legislators on or about March 15th, which is next week, and that will begin the process of finalizing the legislature's preferred budget. And our last story for today, while the front-running sled dog teams in this year's Iditarod raced all ahead today, a contingent of mushers brought up the rear. Some of those at the back of the pack are veteran mushers running slower than they have expected. Others were taking their mandatory 24-hour rests earlier in the race, with plans to leapfrog teams ahead of them. As Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove reports, many are rookies taking their time, just hoping to finish the 1,000-mile race to Nome.
Rookie Joshua Robbins from Willow was at the very back of the pack Wednesday in the red lantern position, about 100 miles behind the race leaders. Robbins was dragging a bag of trash across the dog yard in Nikolai while his dog slept, curled up on piles of straw.
I'm not, you know, I don't even want to use the word race because that's not what I'm here for. So, yeah, we're really just kind of just picking away at this and learning how this all goes.
Not long after leaving the Roan checkpoint on his way to Nikolai, Robin's sled hit a stump or a log, ripping off the drag mat that he stands on to slow down the team.
And the sled like kind of was up in the air sideways, and I'm running as best as I can. It was like just, you know, enough traction on the ground. It was like, all right, this is wild. This is how we just left the checkpoint. This is off to a terrible start.
Robbins used some cord to tie his drag mat back on.
It's definitely not straight, but there's a drag pad there, so it's just a field fix.
Robbins is a true rookie, meaning he hasn't mushed the race and scratched, but Chugiak musher Sean Williams is a rookie who's run most of the Iditarod Trail before. Williams made it within about 70 miles of Nome in the 2022 race, but scratched when he accepted help from a snow machine after getting caught in a dangerous storm outside of the White Mountain checkpoint. Williams was feeding his dogs in McGrath and preparing to hit the trail again a little before noon Wednesday. He said it was helpful to have already seen some of the most treacherous sections of trail.
I was, 2 years ago, I was white knuckle screaming all the way through the farewell, the burn and all that. And this time I just drove the sled like another day. I mean, it was still just as technical, but I mean, you see something, it's like anything, you see it. You know what to expect more, you know?
Maybe less screaming this time?
Yeah, I was too tired. I don't think there was any screaming, just internally, you know?
Williams said he wasn't even paying attention to what place he was in.
I know the obvious people in front. After that, I really have no idea, to be honest with you. Right now, I still have 15 dogs. They're all happy. I'm just trying to get them to where they're all eating and drinking a lot. And, you know, we stop a lot briefly on the trail, and I just kind of pet them, and they're starting to be a little crazy. They're like jumping, and we're not going any faster, but they're like jumping and screaming every time I stop. So it's becoming more fun as we just kind of set that pattern. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun.
Even if Williams didn't know or care, he was in 25th place Wednesday, one spot ahead of Deke Nachtgeboren, a three-time Iditarod finisher from Fairbanks. Nachtgeboren admitted he had hoped to be running a few positions higher.
Oh, we were hoping we'd be a little bit more up in, you know, maybe like the middle of the pack or whatever.
But Nachtgeboren said there was plenty of race to come, about 700 miles from McGrath, and he was happy that his team had gelled during the first roughly 300 miles.
Oh, I mean, the first run or the first two runs, you know, one dog jumping in the snowbank, the other dog's looking over its shoulder, the other dog's, you know, like arguing with his neighbor, and so on and so forth. One dog's pulling, one dog's not. And so when the team starts coming together, it looks more like a 14-valve engine, and all the pistons are going in unison. So it's getting more and more and more like that. And when that happens, it's what is so beautiful in mushing. So we're getting there.
Those 14 pistons, of course, refer to Nachtgeboren's dogs, and that's the number he started with, even though the Iditarod returned to a 16-dog maximum this year. And that's the case for many of the back-of-the-pack mushers because they often have fewer dogs to choose from in their smaller kennels. But for Nachtgeboren's Nautique Sky Kennel, which had enough dogs to field two teams in this year's Yukon Quest Alaska 300, the decision to bring only 14 on the Iditarod was based on wanting to give himself more time to take care of fewer dogs. Also about to leave McGrath on Wednesday as a plane was taxiing nearby, rookie Erin Altimus from Minnesota said she was trying to manage her dog's mental state, saying they were at the edge.
My very best leader is not wanting to lead, which I've never seen him balk in a race before, so that's odd.
Leaning on her sled, Altimus said she was tired and feeling a little goofy herself.
I think so. Yeah, I was thinking, you know, watching the stats and everything on the Iditarod, that the people at the back of the pack are like sleeping a lot and having a great time and talking to each other and hanging out in the checkpoints. Well, I'm here to tell you it's not true.
Despite her sleep deprivation and general suffering, Altimus said she planned to continue after a nice long break in McGrath. In McGrath, I'm Casey Grove.
And that's it for your local news. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll be right back with the Island Messenger in just a minute.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The State of the Union speech tonight will be heavy on economic issues. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. President Biden delivers the address on Capitol Hill this evening. The White House says he will call for higher taxes on corporations and a minimum 25% tax on billionaires. The president will propose using the funds to reduce the federal debt and expand the earned income and child tax credits. Attacks by Yemen's Houthi rebels on cargo ships near the Red Sea became deadly yesterday. A missile struck a ship headed to Saudi Arabia, killing three people and injuring others. The crew abandoned the vessel, which was severely damaged. Initial claims for unemployment benefits held steady last week at 217,000, still indicative of a healthy job market. Tomorrow, the Labor Department releases its monthly jobs report. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, March 7th, 2024. The sunrise today was at 7:46 a.m. The sunset tonight will be at 6:57 p.m. That makes for 11 hours and 11 minutes of daylight, 5 minutes more than yesterday. The record high today was 53 degrees in 1943. The record low was 0 degrees in 1971. Fair skies right now, 34 degrees out of the airport, west winds, 16 miles per hour. Taking a look at the tides in the Kodiak District. That last high tide was at 11:08 a.m. of 9 feet. The next low tide will bottom out at around 6:10 p.m. of negative 0.8 feet. Over on the west side of the island, over in Larsen Bay, that high tide peaked just about half an hour ago, 11:50 a.m. of 14.3 feet. The low tides are going to bottom out again at 6:41 p.m. of negative 1 foot. Jumping over to the community announcements. Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is hosting a grief recovery method. It's an 8-week grief group. You can learn effective tools for how to process feelings of pain and loss while also learning how to live with grief in a manageable wall. This will be done in an interactive and supportive environment with grief specialist Juliana Belden. Classes begin on March 21st from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center. Pre-registration is required. You can go to hpck.org or call 907-512-0600. Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is also hosting yoga for grieving bodies. Sometimes there are no words to touch the complexity and depth of what we're feeling. The one-day workshop uses gentle stretches and focus on breathing to create a bridge between what is felt inside and what's happening outside. That's Sunday, April 7th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 100th Monkey Yoga Studio. Again, for that, you can call 907-512-0600 for more information. And senior citizens of Kodiak is in need of paper bags. They ask that the bags are not torn or soiled. They can be dropped off at the center between 8:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. Kodiak Harvest Food Cooperative is having their annual meeting soon. It's on Thursday, March 28th at Kodiak Community College. There will be a vendor market from 5 to 6 p.m., and the meeting will be from 6 to 7 p.m. There will be light refreshments, and all are welcome, but you have to be a member to vote in the Board of Director elections. And we're in Season 10 of Galley Tables. The next one is coming up on April 5th. The theme will be Call of the Wild. And there's also Scuttlebutt going on, a galley tables workshop for youth. It's on Tuesdays from 4 p.m. to 5:30. It's at the Kodiak Public Library Craft Room. It's a free weekly storytelling workshop for high schoolers where they can practice building and sharing stories with help from experienced storytellers. For more information, you can call 907-486-7396. And spring is coming, and with it, the inevitable yearly springing forward of the clocks. Daylight savings time happens this weekend on Sunday, March 10 at 2 a.m. Alaska time. Clocks will be going ahead 1 hour later sunrises, but more light at night to make bedtimes that much more challenging for parents with young ones. Don't be late for your Sunday date. Forward into the light. There's also a community garden meeting for bed prepping methods, seed starting, garden planning, and a work party and cleanup planning. It'll be at the Tuchank building on Near Island in the main meeting room. That's Thursday, March 14th, next week from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., where you can grow the community together. For more information, you can call Ian at 907-486-5574. Isle Bells also has their March Gladness concert series. The next one is Sunday, March 10th at 4 p.m. at the Canna Marketplace. They will also have a show Saturday, March 30th at 4 p.m. in the Auditorium Choral Pod. What lovely sounds. and Senior Citizens of Kodiak Island Cove Adult Day Program has been helping families to care for their elders for over 35 years. Adult Day services provide relief for the family, reduce isolation for the adult, and offers a fun and stimulating place to spend a few hours in a safe environment. Adults participate in activities to regain strengths, do memory work, and stay connected to what's happening in the community and the world. If you've considered Adult Day services for your parents or spouse, you can call 486-2203. And the Kodiak Area Mentoring Program is offering a community workshop on addiction and recovery. The next session focuses on the cost of recovery and will be held on Saturday, March 9th from 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. The workshop will provide an overview of addiction and recovery presented by James Price. The workshops will be held at Kodiak Area Mentoring Program, next door and upstairs from AT&T. For more information, you can call 907-539-5736 or 907-539-6905. There are also several meetings coming up for the Kodiak Island Borough. Today at 3 p.m., the Architectural Engineering Review Board has a regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room. Tonight at 6:30 p.m., the Borough Assembly has the regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers. On March 12th at 6 p.m., the Fire Protection Area No. 1 Board regular meeting and budget public hearing will be at the Bayside Fire Hall. On March 13th at 6:30 p.m., the Planning and Zoning Commission work session will be in the Borough Assembly Chambers. And on March 14th at 6:30 p.m., the Assembly work session will be in the Borough Assembly Chambers. Agendas can be found on the Borough's website or by calling the clerk at 907-486-9310. That's it for your Island Messenger. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll be right back with Spotlight.
The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings.
On Thursday, March 7th at 6:30 p.m., the Assembly is having a regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers.
All these meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 for any questions.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.